So our story so far, we've seen that tefila, practically speaking and conceptually speaking, is made up of a few points of origin, possibly min haTorah, but most likely and certainly most of its elements are drabanan. But there are quite a few elements. So there is something that was contributed by the avos. And what exactly that is, we spent some time trying to figure out, because it's not the obligation, nor is it the text, but it seems to be the existence of the various tefillos and a number of theories as to what it is about their existence. But at a minimum, the existence of the tefillos contributed by the avos and the obligation formalized midrabanan to a three-time-a-day structure by Chazal, and associated with the obligatory structure of the korbanos. And as we saw, that yields that there are a couple of different levels of both obligation and fulfillment. And as the Gemara says, somewhat mysteriously, but now hopefully we understand it a little bit more, it's possible to have schar tefila bizmana, that's the ideal. But even failing that, even if you don't have schar tefila in its time, you can also have schar tefila. There is a concept of tefila that is meaningful and justified even outside of its zone. And in that context, we see now the Gemara is going to bring us into this very fascinating and involved and practically relevant topic of tefillas tashlumin, telling us that under some circumstances, and we'll have to see what those circumstances are, that it's possible to make up a tefila. So there are going to be a number of issues that we're going to try to figure out over the next few days in understanding the basic concepts here and the fundamental issues, the practical issues and the conceptual issues that emerge from this idea. So if you were investigating this topic, what would you want to know first and foremost about the idea of Teshulman, especially given our introduction? Yeah, Sam?
What to say?
What to say? Okay, so what kind of question, what are you unsure about when you say what to say?
You miss the doubt, what should you say, the whole doubt, what should you make up if it's, so we know, if it's like Motei Shabbos, should you, which parts of it should you say, or if it's Shabbos going Mincha, the Arab Shabbos going to the Shabbos, what should you say?
Okay, so that's going to be an important question, right? Given that sometimes the tefillos are different from each other, so which tefila is going to dictate? So if you're replacing a tefillah in a different time, so is it the new tefillah that sets the rules, or is it the previous tefillah? Yes, sir. Yeah.
Based on how, like you said, tefillahs are from Avos
Kavaras. Speak a little louder, sorry.
Based on that tefillahs are given based on Avos Kavaras, how they're incorporated, mm-hmm. how are we incorporating the fact of how they were established into now moving away from the form that was established to the kind of the redemption?
That's a very interesting and deep question, I think. So how do we still feel the impact of the Avos and Tefillah?
Yeah,
that's a very deep question. So that's a couple levels beyond us, but that's definitely something for our personal Tefillah experience we definitely want to consider and figure out. Okay, yes, what else? Sorry?
Why you can do Tashlumah.
Oh, okay. So that's also an important question. It's a conceptual question. Where does the basis for Teshulman come from? Yeah?
Now, once you do Teshulman, is it as if you actually dive in that field, or it's a different lower level?
Oh, okay. Also a great question. These questions so far are mostly conceptual kind of questions, but they're important questions. So does Teshulman actually do what it sounds like, in the sense that it'll fully make up everything? Now, do you get a sense, by the way, from the Gemara whether it is that or not? Does it actually...
No.
So your sense is no, right? So what's your sense? Not tefillas mana, right? Okay. So already maybe you're missing something, yeah?
You know? What comes first?
What comes first? Okay. So now you're telling me a detailed question. And that's something that is a meta question, because that's going to come first as one of the major topics. And that, we'll see, is going to be high on our list. Okay. So practically speaking, when you're taking two tefillos together now, What comes first? Yes?
When you're allowed to recite, when you're not allowed to use this 12 tashlumin.
Say it again. You're not
when
allowed.
You're allowed to recite, allowed to do tashlumin.
Okay, so are there exclusions from tashlumin? And are there limitations? And I assume you mean in two ways. I'm just guessing. But for example, does there expire the concept of tashlumin? Can you tashlumin days later, filos later? Right, which we're familiar with a certain limitation, probably from Tosfos and from practice, but if you saw, for example, the Meir, it wasn't necessarily such a given that there's a limitation. And also, are all tefillos included in the tashlumin benefit? Most of part of tashlumin? Is Ni'ilah part of tashlumin? What else?
What does tashlumin really add? What's the real purpose of it? If you're davening now, Marv, Mincha, what is it adding to it?
Oh, that's an interesting question also. You're saying, if I'm interacting with God right now, so what do I need another tefillah?
It sounds like it's just going back and check off the box.
Interesting. It's an interesting question. Saying, why should my relationship with God need to be complicated by some tefillah that I missed before? Right now, I have the chiyuv in front of me. Okay, what else, Ben?
It's kind of like what Jack said, but what if you forgot to do your tashlumin?
Okay, so is there a tashlumin for tashlumin? Yes?
Where do you place the tashlumin tefillah, whether it's first or second, where do you place it in the davening? But like if you're mincha before ashray, after ashray, by mar, before you say the rest of like shema, or after, like where do you place it?
Yeah, and by the way, there's a double question there. Because the question of the order, which we know, having seen the Gemara, we know it's going to be an important question. But there's also an additional element, which I think you're asking, is that are we assuming not just that when we daven chakras in the mincha zone, that it's going to be important whether it's mincha first or chakras first, but are we also assuming that the tashlumin is in a certain position regarding the previous tefillah? So let's say here in YU, you missed chakras. So now it's a 2:30 mincha. So, do you have to daven the extra tefillah right after? What if you want to do your tashlumin at 5 o'clock? Is that okay? Shmuel?
Yeah. Is it, what cases could you even... Do you have tashlumin or do you not have tashlumin?
Oh, okay. That's also going to be very practically important.
Also,
right? Because we know that the Gemara tells us that it's not always available. Which also relates, I guess, to Jack's question about limitations. And so if the Gemara tells us there's a standard, and the Gemara seems to associate that with a pasuk, presumably it's not a limud in the actual sense for a lot of reasons, but this idea of uvas la yuchal iskon, right, that there is this notion that certain things should be irreparable, and that is somebody who's mevatel tefillah b'mezid. So there's going to be some kind of a sharp line drawn between mezid and everything else, or maybe the other direction. Maybe there's a sharp line drawn between shogeg and everything else. So where is that line? Certainly, practically, that's going to be important.
So is there a chiyuv, or is it just a rishus? If you
want, great question. Also, what if I don't want to do tashlumin? Right, especially if, as we'll see, could sometimes be the case. Maybe there are trade-offs to tashlumin. Maybe tashlumin is going to come at the expense of something else. Right? It's not necessarily that you don't care about davening, but maybe there are other reasons that I may not want to do tashlumin, which we'll see. But
does the tashlumin have any like significance regarding a minyan?
Okay. Also a very important question. So where does tefillah b'tzibur come in? Tani?
If you weren't able to daven, like an oni, or someone who's not able to daven, do you have to use tashlumin for when you weren't able to?
Okay.
Or is it only if you're able to
tefillah? Excellent question. It relates to Shmuel's question, right? Which also goes, you'll see, this is going to be, just to give you a little preview, it's going to be a major machlokas, because you could find that there are a couple of levels that the question that Shmuel's asking, actually, you could find yourself on either side of it. That there may be situations where you don't get the benefit of a tashlumin, let's say a mezid, but there could also be situations on the other side of the fence meaning situations where you don't need a tashlumin. So that's your question, right? That it could be, not that your excuse isn't good enough, your excuse might be too good. So maybe tashlumin is kind of a middle category for people who have just the right kind of reason, where they're excused but not that excused. You can take the final light, take the final late, but not that you don't have to take it at all. So what kind of category are we talking about here? All right, so all of these are good questions. Some of them are more conceptual, trying to understand why and how did it come about and what exactly is the concept here. Some of these questions are important practical questions. And often, as we'll try to highlight, they relate to each other. And the why often is going to impact the how, which is going to impact the what. So let's try to track how all that unfolds. Now, when it comes to this particular subject, as we'll see over the next few days, Tashlumin is a pretty sprawling sugya. There are a lot of details, and there are a lot of sub-questions. It's very fascinating because, first of all, it has a lot to say about what tefillah is, and that is something so central to our existence that this gives us a lot to work with on a daily basis, not because we're missing tefillos on a daily basis, but because this teaches us a lot about the structure of tefillah. And arguably, we could say that's why this is the first thing we're taught about tefillah. Before we know anything else in the Mishnah and in the Gemara about tefillah, we're first told about the Zman and what happens if you miss the Zman. So this sugya we can relate to not only in terms of what happens should we miss a davening, but what it teaches us more fundamentally about how davening is set up and what it does for us. So that's a beautiful opportunity. But you'll also see from a lumdisha perspective, there's quite a lot that's very gishmak about this. Again, it sprawls on in a lot of directions. So it's going to subdivide in a lot of ways. There's a lot of topics within topics that are going to unfold over the next few days. So we'll try to break it down into smaller units. But first, just to keep in mind, especially emanating from what we saw over the past 2 days, so some broad questions to have as a background for Tashlumin as a whole. So presumably, there is a connection here to the general structure of tefillah. That what we've seen is that tefillah seems to represent something that is tied in a very fundamental way to time. The fact that we have these three different tefillos suggests that there's something fundamentally special for each one. Shacharis, Mincha, Ma'ariv each have their own qualities to them. And therefore, the time of each tefillah has its own identity. And yet, there's a unit of the three together. So understanding that relationship is going to be important. And somehow, the whole concept of Tashlumin, of making up one tefillah in the zone of another, is going to teach us something about how these tefillos are constructed. So as we explore these details, keep that in mind. What does Tashlumin reflect? The fact that you can make up a tefillah in the slot of the next one, at least, maybe more, but we know at least that much, at least the next tefillah is an opportunity to make up a tefillah that was missed. What's going on? is it that indeed that unique tefillah is able to be restored in the next slot? The shachars that you missed can be recovered in the mincha zone? Is that what's happening? Which maybe relates to your question of what is said. Or is it not really? And shachris per se, if it was missed this morning, is not actually going to be replaced by two shmor esrei and mincha. And the Gemara told us schar tefillah bizmana is not going to be recovered. But schar tefillah, yes. And there is a different idea that we're accomplishing. And maybe it's something about the totality of the package that we're maintaining. And that has a value. So it's the three tefillah a day package that we are keeping up. And that Teshlumen is addressing. But the missed shachris is still missed. But there's still a value in davening two shmona esreis for mincha, because holding on to the number of opportunities that we have to daven has its own value. Yoni? Okay, so keep that in mind as we see the various details. Are we actually fully replacing the tefillah that was missed in a later opportunity? Or is that not really what's happening? Is it simply that we are holding on to the overall structure in terms of number, but the original tefillah, with all of its unique particulars, that's not necessarily coming back at a later time? So that issue is going to be beneath the surface of a lot of questions. And one topic that was on yesterday's list that we didn't really get to, you saw the Gemara and Daf Lamed Aleph, which seemingly separate and apart from our discussion of that there's a Shacharis and there's a Mincha and there's a Ma'ariv and there's a Avram Yitzchak and a Yaakov and there's a Tmidin and a Hektach Lav Mevarim, seemingly separate from all that, the Gemara had another limud that there's a concept of three tefillos a day. And that Gemara and Daf Lamed Aleph, you saw that source from yesterday's list. So what does that mean? So the whole idea that there's just the notion of three tefillos a day, and if you saw the Rush, the discussion we've shown him, what does it mean? Is it that there should be at least three tefillos a day? That there should be a maximum of three tefillos a day? And if it's a maximum, so we know that that's not really the case, because there's a concept of, even separate aside Musaf and Ni'ilah, but there's a concept of Tfilas Nedava, that at least theoretically, it's possible to offer up a extra tefillah, but there are rules for when that happens. So Rishonim discussed that maybe that's what it means, that in order to go beyond the basic three, you need to have what the Rishonim call a chiddush. We'll talk separately about what that means. But there needs to be a justification to go beyond a basic three tefillos. So the notion of there being some kind of inherent association of three tefillos a day, that's also something to be aware of and to try to understand how that is a part of our story here also. Yoni?
Mamad Aleph?
Yes.
From Daniel, the proof?
Yeah.
Is that proof showing us that there's an idea of three tefillos, or just because he did three, we should also do three?
That's what's not clear. So that's why I'm saying, just to keep that on your radar screen, that there is some concept of three, and Rishonim aren't sure what it means, but to be aware that it might mean something, that there is some like idea of a count. And when we talk about Teshlumen, we may have that as part of our picture too. But it's not necessarily that our missed Shachris or our missed Mincha can come back at a different point, but that we're trying to keep an overall count here, and that's what has a benefit to it. Okay, so with those questions in mind, so the first topic that we'll take on is the topic that the Gemara seems to put first and front and center. And it's a topic that the Shulchan Aruch puts front and center. And so today's Makaro is brought up. And that is a question of order, which is also what some of you brought up as your question. So we know that there seems to be maybe a surprising emphasis on the order of the Tashlumin. So let's say, for example, somebody misses Shacharis and is going to take this opportunity, we'll call it, to make it up at Mincha. So Davin Tushmon Esrei is at Mincha. Apparently, Shulchan Aruch tells us that it matters the order. That it's important that the first Shmona Esrei be Mincha, the one that is current, and that the Tashlumin only happen afterwards. Now in the Gemara, it's a little bit complicated, because how does the Gemara display that whole story? Yeah?
Erev Shabbos and Shabbos, and then Shabbos and Motzei Shabbos.
And Motzei, right. So the Gemara conveys it through...
It brings it in the Kasha, right,
and the Gemara conveys it through what you might call a confounding detail, a detail that confuses the story a little bit because you're not sure how important it is. So when you have that whole discussion about Atachon and Tanu, so there, that is a somewhat unusual kind of situation, where there is an aspect of the Shmona Esrei that's different, both in terms of it's different from one tefillah to the next, meaning that the Motzei Shabbos Shmona Esrei is going to be different than the Mincha Shabbos Shmona Esrei in a few ways. But also, Atachon and Tanu is perhaps unique in that even if you were going to say two Shmona Esreis, let's say, this afternoon, so there's no reason not to say Alevi Yavo both times. But Atachon and Tanu is not simply a kol azkara, it's not simply a reference, but it's havdalah, it's meant to accomplish something, a one-time thing. So there isn't really a reason to say it twice. So it is unusual in the sense that it is a overt declaration of which Shmona Esrei you are intending to be reciting. So it's hard to know how important the detail is from that example. So given that we're not sure what to do with that, so the questions that surround the ruling of the Shulchan Aruch, what are they? So the Shulchan Aruch, Aruch Hayim Kuf Ches Aleph, tells us that the order is Chiyuv first, Tashlumin after, and if you flip it, it's no good. What are the major questions that need to be clarified about that ruling? Yes? All right.
Are both the Shmona Esreis no good or just the first one?
Okay, that's a good question. It's not even what I was thinking of. But, okay, are both no good? Yes? Yeah.
What's the difference in the Shmona Esreis that do it in a different order?
Okay, so what's the difference or is there a difference?
Yeah, like how are you supposed to know if you didn't?
Okay. So how are you supposed to, I keep tweaking your question, how are you supposed to know? Meaning, sometimes you won't know. Let's say, for example, if it's Shabbos into Mincha, so, or let's say a little more so, Mincha into Ma'ariv, where even Shalom Rav and Sim Shalom, you don't have that difference. Right, so sometimes there isn't any difference. And the truth is, we also need to clarify your previous question from before. So we'll supply one detail here, and we'll mention, this is not something that's so obvious, but we'll take for granted right now, that in practice, we say the same Shmona Esrei twice of whatever zone we're in. So this afternoon, you'll say two minchas for Rosh Chodesh. Question about that?
No.
So just to address that, so given that anyway, you're saying the same Shmona Esrei twice. So how is it going to express itself that you intend one to be the chiyuv and one to be the tashlumin? So that's what we were getting at when the Gemara with this example about Atal Chametonu was a confounding example, because is it trying to tell us that it's only in that case where you somehow expressed yourself that there's an issue, or at least a ma'akev issue, a so to speak fatal issue, or would it apply even if it was just purely mental? You just had in mind that this is the Tashlumin and that other one after that is the Chov. That also has the same significance. So that's one pretty important practical question that has to be clarified. And in terms of the nature of the question, so first of all, certainly this is a big practical detail that needs to be established, because it leaves us a little bit at sea, not knowing what to do. So your question is important, first of all, as effect both Shmon Esrei's, but I gotta know, do I have to say another Shmon Esrei? That's a pretty big ramification. And if, as some of the Svarim highlights, if you're gonna tell me that it only applies when I somehow make it clear that I meant a different order, so that's a strange situation, because it's very limited when that comes up. So you're going to tell me that this only applies under very limited circumstances. There aren't so many situations where it is going to be clear that there is one way or the other. So some of the Nosei Kelim, for example, suggest, well, maybe what might be an example, let's say you want to make up Shacharis at Mincha time, and you say Ashrei before the second Shemona Esrei, the second one, so it shows that you think the second one is Mincha. So Magen Avraham and others, if you saw, talk about that. But then they clarify that that's not a great example, and they don't fully clarify even why it's not such a great example. But it's not a great example for a number of reasons. But why isn't it a great example? Sorry? Say it again? Right, because it's not in the Amida itself, right? So it's not necessarily going to serve that purpose if it has to be in the Amida. So maybe this doesn't actually show you that the Shmona Esrei is itself for a different purpose. But also, you'll see a little bit later on that, just as a goes to your question, that Shmuel asked this question, that as a matter of protocol, there's going to be a discussion as to whether the two Shmona Esrei should immediately flow into each other, or should there be some kind of a break between the two. So some suggest that just as a matter of format, you should have an Esrei between the two in order to structure them. So to say that having an Esrei before the second Shmona Esrei means you think it's Mincha doesn't necessarily follow, because that may even be the way you're supposed to do Tashlumin in general. So that's not really going to be a helpful point. So it reverts to saying that it's very rare that you're going to have a situation where there's any overt indication that one Shmona Esrei or the other is labeled. And if that's what the halacha applies to, only these rare situations, and the Shulchan Aruch doesn't clarify that, that's unusual. So that's hard to understand. But on the other hand, if it's the other way, that it applies even only to your intent, that's also a little surprising. Because is that what we're saying? That your whole plan here can be sabotaged based on just wrong intent? Now, somebody asked me the first day, is this comparable, I think Ezra asked me, right? Is this comparable to Tosfos and Daf Yud Beis, the Gemara in Daf Yud Beis, which talks about Pasach with the Shechar of Siyam B'dechamra, and the other way around, about somebody who makes a bracha on wine thinking it's beer, or beer thinking it's wine, and the whole discussion in Rishonim about, are we talking about somebody who actually pronounced the wrong bracha, or somebody who just had in mind the wrong bracha? So there the Rishonim differ as to whether it's enough simply to be thinking the wrong thing, or does it have to express itself somehow. So it could be there's a similarity here, and some Svarim actually do draw that comparison between that sugya and this. It's a surprising idea. But whose hand is up first? I can't do Mahathir the order. But, okay, we actually only have another minute. But
why can't you just call it Mincha, say Leinu, and then say Shmona Esrei Shacharis?
You can. Maybe you can, because the order you possibly you can, but it, still the order has to be that mincha comes first and shabbos.
There it would be clear. Like the way we do it, where you have, even if you have ashrei in between, just practice.
Yeah, if you want to go out of your way to make it clear, ma tov ma noim. But the question is, what if it became clear the wrong way? Or
if it's
not clear either way.
If somebody
is very intentional about it and is looking to make it clear that he's doing it the right way, that's great. But what we're wondering is, what if when we say that it's, if he does it the wrong way, it's problematic, how clear does it have to be that it's the wrong way?
So why isn't it set up that being...
If somebody is aware enough to make it clear that he's doing it the right way, that's great. And maybe he doesn't even have to go that far. But the question is, what threshold is there to mess it up? Not what is necessary in order to do it right. That yes, you can go out of your way to make it clear that you're doing it right, but that's not the question. The question is, how overt does it have to be in order to be wrong? So we are, unfortunately, just out of time. So this is one of the major questions that we'll have to clarify, God willing, on Monday. But what's the other major question to think about? What's the other major question? Yeah, Ezra?
Why this order?
Why? Why does it matter so much? Right? Why does it matter so much, the order, especially in light of the fact that it's crucial, that it's do or die, that we have in many places in Halakha ordering, but rarely is it so ma'akev, the idea that the Shulchan Aruch can say you're not yotze if you switch the order, that's very unusual. So that's a question to think about that we'll discuss next time. That why should it be that not only that the order is this way, but that it's ma'akev, that you can't get away with switching the order even after the fact, that's very unusual, says something about the reasoning. God willing, we'll discuss that next time. Next.